Good morning again, everyone. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 41. So, when I was in seminary, I met this gentleman. I don't remember where I met him. He was, I don't know if he was from our church or somewhere, but he lives in Winona Lake. And I remember he had a house down kind of near what we called the island. And again, I don't have any idea how I met this guy. But he asked me to join him for lunch after we had known each other for, I don't know, probably a couple weeks, couple months maybe. And so he invited me to lunch one day over at his house. So I went over to his house and he put out this nice little spread. And he started to talk a little bit about his business and stuff. And he basically asked me if I'd be interested in working for him. Well, I was working, I think, at the newspaper at the time, making $5 an hour. And so I thought, well, sure, anything's probably better than, you know, $5 an hour. And I think he was offering me something like 10 or 15 bucks an hour, something like that. It's really good. So I'm like, well, sure, it depends on what you're looking for, though. And so we talked a little bit, and to be real honest, I never understood him. He would explain his business to me, and he would talk about what he did, and he was some kind of a consultant, and he would travel all over the nation, and he would give these talks and do this consulting, but for the life of me, I have no idea what it was. And so we met together for probably about a month, at least once a week, and we'd sit down for an hour or two, and he would pose these questions to me. And then he would ask me to give him a biblical response. And so what he wanted me to do was to help him formulate his consulting business and what he would share on these trips that he would make and make sure that what he was presenting was theologically sound and theologically accurate. So I would meet with him and he would ask a question. Still had no clue how it applied to his business or what he was doing with it. And so we would talk through this stuff and he would wanted to pay me for that. I never accepted any kind of payment from him for it because I kept saying, well, let's just keep talking and I'll figure out what you need. But it was the strangest thing because we could meet for an hour, maybe an hour and a half, and he would talk that whole time, trying to explain what he did for a living and what these talks involved. But it was so, like, the only word I can think of to describe it is nebulous. It was like trying to get my hands and, you know, hold up melting jello because I literally could not figure out what this guy did for a living aside from, I know you go and give talks. I don't know what the subject matter is. I'd ask him, like, well, what's the subject of your talk? And he would start to wax on very eloquently about his talk and none of it made any sense. And so for, you know, after about 3 or 4 months of actually, you know, hanging out with this guy, I just kind of said, well, you know, I'm kind of busy with studies and other things because I felt really bad letting this guy pay me just to sit and talk with him when I had no clue. And again, he would ask me a question and I'd be like, I don't even know how to answer that or how would I apply a theological principle to that? And it was this, I've never been in anything like that before. To this day, I don't know. But it kind of, did you ever listen to Kamala Harris talk? I can say that here. Okay? This is safe. This is safe space. When she would talk, and literally she would have a lot of words, and it would go on, and you kind of go, what? Not only could I not outline it, I have no idea what the subject is. Okay? It's like talking for the sake of talking. So I used to wonder, I'm like, how does this guy get, and he was worth quite a bit of money. He got paid really well to do what he did. I'm like, if he can't explain it to me, then what? How is he making a living doing this? To this day, I don't know what he did, what he needed me for, except he kept saying, well, I just need your theological input. I want to make sure that what I share is kind of grounded in the Bible. And I don't know. I needed an interpreter. Now, what does it have to do with today? Pharaoh needed an interpreter. That's the connection. We're going to look at when Joseph actually appears before the Pharaoh to interpret the Pharaoh's dreams that he had. And there's a number of things in this passage that actually, as I worked through it, kind of began to challenge me some in a good way. And I'm not saying that I don't get challenged. I get challenged every time. But in kind of a way that I really felt not so much that this is a reminder to me, where oftentimes, you know, you've been walking with the Lord for 40 years, a lot of times you go through the scriptures and you're reminded of things. You know, sometimes you kind of go, wow, I totally didn't even know that. You get that some, but I think those of us that have walked with Christ for a long time know that oftentimes when you're reading the scripture, you're listening to a message by somebody, a lot of times it's just a good reminder, right? And so I get that all the time. Well, this is one where I kind of went, man, you know, yeah, I kind of think I knew that, but I really needed a kick in the pants. And so I had kind of one of those moments with this today with this passage. So I think this will be a good passage even for me to go through again with you folks this morning. But we're in Genesis chapter 41. And I'm going to break it down into, typically like I normally do, three or four sections. This is going to be three sections again. But the first thing we're going to see is that the Lord simply revealed his plans to Pharaoh. And we'll learn something about God in that. We're going to also see that the Lord sent Joseph to explain those plans to Pharaoh. And then lastly, and this is where I felt like I was quite challenged, the Lord actually used Joseph to exhort the Pharaoh in those plans. And so we're going to see how that kind of plays out today. So let's look at the first section, which is chapter 40, verses 1 through 7. Read those with me. Then it came about after these things. No, wait a minute, I've got to go to chapter 41. Now it happened at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he was standing by the Nile. And lo, from the Nile there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed in the marsh grass. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them from the Nile, ugly and gaunt, and they stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. The ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 sleek and fat cows. Then Pharaoh awoke. He fell asleep and dreamed a second time, and behold, 7 ears of grain came up on a single stalk, plump and good. Then behold, 7 ears, thin and scorched, by the east wind sprouted up after them. The thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump and full ears. Then Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So basically, we know that the Pharaoh's dreams here were not simply your everyday, average, nightly dreams. They were actually revelation from God. First, divinely inspired dreams have sort of been playing a fairly significant role in the Joseph story so far, haven't they? We know that Joseph was a recipient of 2 dreams in chapter 37, and then we have the baker and the cupbearer of the king who ended up in prison with Joseph. They had dreams as well. And then looking forward, we see that we're going to be told specifically that the Pharaoh's dreams were all about what was going to happen in Egypt. We're told that they were revelation from God. And so we know that these are divine dreams that the Pharaoh had. They weren't just your average, ordinary, every night dreams that we have. We also know that these are divinely inspired dreams because later in the chapter, Joseph specifically tells us that. Tells us God was speaking to him, to Pharaoh. So we know that these are divinely inspired dreams that the Pharaoh had. And he had 2 dreams. The first dream was standing at the Nile, and he had these 7 healthy and fat cows that were grazing along the area. And then they got eaten by these 7 thin, ugly cows. Second dream, something very similar. He's got this dream of this stalk of corn that's got these 7 gorgeous, plump ears of corn on it. But then there's another 7 thin and scorched ears of corn that swallow those good ears up. And so he has these 2 dreams, 7 and 7, if we will. But the problem is that he couldn't understand them. And so we'll get to that in just a minute here. But as you look at just these 7 verses, is there anything we can learn from this? I would say there is, and it's very simply this, that God is a God who reveals his plans. Now that may seem simple to us, but I think it's something that we need to remember. It tells us something about God. You go back to Genesis chapter 1, God repeatedly reveals from Genesis chapter 1 all the way through Revelation, the end of the book, God is a God who has a pattern of revealing his plans to mankind. He's a revelatory God, is how we would refer to it. Sometimes he reveals his plans in very specific ways to specific individuals in great detail. We think about, you know, he revealed himself to Adam and Eve. He walked in the garden, we're told, with Adam and Eve. He gave them the command about not eating from the tree. We have God calling out Noah, and being very specific with Noah, explaining in great detail, right down to how he's supposed to build the ark, how long it would last, what to do with the animals. He pulled Abraham aside and spoke to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, with very specific dreams or visions, with details. Now, in some cases, not all the details, but they were pretty specific. And so we see God do that with individuals. He even did that with nations. You know, he quite often with Israel spelled out exactly what Israel should expect, what would happen in their disobedience. Told them sometimes exactly what would happen to them as a nation being attacked by their enemies, naming those enemies, telling them what would happen with those enemies, telling them they'd go off into Babylon and how long they'd be in Babylon. So even with nations, he would sometimes be very specific. So he was a revelatory God. He did this through dreams, visions, prophets, direct revelation, the writing of Scripture. He is a revelatory God. He has not left us to float around just kind of wondering, you know, thinking, I wonder what he must be like. Having us try to guess and figure things out. Now, in all fairness, you and I can speak for myself, I've not had a dream or a vision. I don't ever remember hearing God's voice in his deep baritone. Would it be baritone or bass? I don't know. But either way, I've never had that experience. I've never had an experience like Adam and Eve with God walking through my family room. I've never had an experience like Noah or Abraham or others. Some would argue it's because God no longer works that way. I'm not necessarily convinced of that. I just know that it's not normative. I don't think it was even normative in the Old Testament. The fact that we see that with these individuals, when there are millions, maybe billions of people on the earth, we don't know what they experienced back in the Old Testament. But we know these individuals. So I don't even know that that is normative. I would suggest that it's probably not normative that God talks to us that way. But I don't know that it means that he doesn't occasionally do that. I can't say that. I can't speak to everybody's experience. But with that said, God has actually been very clear about his redemptive plan, hasn't he? He's made that absolutely, abundantly clear. And that is the more important plan, if you think about it. Think about what he did with Abraham and calling Abraham. He revealed to Abraham certain aspects of Abraham's life. Was that the most important thing associated with Abraham and God's plan for him? Absolutely not. Because God's plan ultimately was his redemptive plan, and he would bless all the nations through Abraham. So it was his redemptive plan that was more important than the individual specifics. Now, I'm not saying those individual specifics aren't important or necessary. But what we find is that the most important thing that God has revealed throughout the Bible are aspects of who he is and his redemptive plan. And that's found in every book of the Bible. And why is that? Because he wants us to know. He's a revelatory God. He has a plan, and he revealed that plan to us, to mankind. Look at Psalm 19. It says that he, through his creation, makes known who he is, certain attributes about him, but then very specifically, he talks about the Word and how the Word reveals his redemptive plan for us and for mankind. And so just like he revealed to Pharaoh what his plan was for not just Pharaoh, but for the nation of Egypt, because that's part of what his plan in his dreams were, was specifically related to Egypt. So just like he revealed to Pharaoh, he reveals to us as well, but again, maybe not always specifically. He may not have revealed to me that he wanted me to go to seminary. I believe he wanted me to, but I didn't get this banner all of a sudden dropped down from heaven. I didn't get a text message saying, go to Grace. I had a sense that God wanted me to go. I believe he did. But it wasn't maybe as quite as black and white. But the one thing I am absolutely convinced of is what he's revealed about his redemptive plan. That's black and white. And it's because he's a revelatory God. He reveals to us. He wants people to know his redemptive plan. It may not be for us to know all the minor details of our lives, exactly what he wants us to do for a career, or where he wants us to go, but he absolutely wants us to know about Jesus Christ, the gospel, and what's involved now with our relationship with Him. That's why we have the epistles in the New Testament that spell out what He expects of us. That's why the Old Testament has the law. He wanted Israel to know specifically how they were to behave, what they were to do. And so He's a revelatory God, and we see that here. He had a plan for Pharaoh, He had a plan for Egypt, and even had a plan for Joseph. And He revealed those plans because He's a revelatory God. He does not make us sit and wonder and guess what He expects. However, there's another part to this, and it's what we see next, is that the Pharaoh didn't have any idea how to understand it. He had these dreams. They were now, in all fairness, they were symbolic. Okay? Didn't know what to do with those. So what did he do? Well, he sent Joseph to Pharaoh to explain to him what these dreams meant so that the Pharaoh would understand exactly what God was revealing to him. Look at verse 8 of chapter 41. It says, "Now in the morning his spirit was troubled, so he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh." Now the Pharaoh was troubled because, like most ancient religions or most ancient people at the time, they believed that dreams were communications from their gods. Exactly what Pharaoh would have expected. They either thought it was people from the afterlife or from their gods revealing something to them, so dreams were important to them. So he called all of his wise men, his magicians, but it says that none of them could interpret this. They couldn't make heads or tails out of it. But fortunately, not all was lost for Pharaoh, because there was somebody who could interpret these dreams for him. Look at verses 9 through 13. "Then the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh, saying, 'I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. We had a dream on the same night, he and I, each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we related them to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream, and just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me to my office, but he hanged him.'" So what we find here is this cupbearer. Now we remember who that is, don't we? Remember when he was in prison, he and the baker had a dream. Each had their own dream, but they couldn't interpret them either. And so Joseph offered to interpret the dreams for them. But you remember Joseph looked at him and said, "Hey, remember me when you get out. Tell the Pharaoh about me." And the assumption there is that he would remember and Joseph would get out of prison. But we find out here, really in the context, it's been 2 years. The cupbearer forgot about Joseph, or at least didn't say anything about it. So Joseph languished for another 2 years in prison. And finally, something triggers this when the chief cupbearer here in verse 9, when he learns about the Pharaoh's dreams as he's pulling all of these magicians and sorcerers and advisors in front of him, and none of them can interpret the dream, all of a sudden something kind of clicks in his head, and he's like, "Oh, that Hebrew back in prison, he did it for me." And it's not clear here when he says, "I would make mention today of my own offenses." Some interpret that to be that he's thinking, "Oh, I offended Joseph, and I'm being reminded that I've offended Joseph now because I was supposed to tell about him to the Pharaoh and get him released from prison." Or if the offenses here relate to what he says in verse 10, which was the offenses that got him locked up in prison in the first place. It's not really clear. It could be either one. But the point is that the cupbearer remembers Joseph was able to interpret these dreams. And so he shares this with the Pharaoh. But the most important part about that is verse 13, where it says, "Just as he interpreted them for us, they came true." That's the key. And that's what now gets the attention of the Pharaoh, because none of his men were able to determine what these dreams meant. But this cupbearer is now telling him there is somebody who did interpret our dreams, and they came true exactly. That's what the Pharaoh wants. He wants somebody that can adequately interpret his dreams. So we see what he does then, verses 14 through 24. "The Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon, and when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, "In my dream, behold, I was standing on the back of the Nile, on the bank of the Nile, and behold, seven cows, fat and sleek, came up out of the Nile, and they gazed in the marsh grass. Lo, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, just as I had never seen for ugliness in all the land of Egypt, and the lean and the ugly cows ate up the first seven fat cows. Yet, when they devoured them, it could not be detected that they had devoured them, for they were just as ugly as before. Then I awoke. I saw also in my dream, and behold, seven ears, full and good, came up of a single stalk. And lo, seven ears, withered, thin, and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed the seven good ears. Then I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me." And so we have Pharaoh explaining these dreams. It's interesting here because it says that he hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. There's two things I think we can learn from that. One is that he was anxious and he was eager. He hurriedly did it. He needed an answer to his dream. But we also learned something here about where Joseph had been staying. I alluded to this last week or the week before. It describes where Joseph had been confined as a dungeon or a pit. This wasn't just some cush prison he was in. He was literally probably in a hole in the ground pit. It says that he had to shave himself and change his clothes coming out. Part of that was because the Hebrews typically wore beards. Egyptians typically didn't, except for maybe the kings wearing the beards. But so he cleaned himself up. But the Pharaoh is anxious now, and he shares these dreams. I love the fact that when Joseph hears about this, did you see what his response was there? He's basically very humble, but he's also really confident. Did you catch that? Look down in verse 8 again. Yes, verse 8. Is that right? Yeah. He says, 16. I'm sorry. Got it written down wrong in my notes here. He says, "It's not in me." In other words, it's not my ability. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. And there's a lot of different ways to translate that last phrase, favorable answer. But it basically means that God's going to give you an answer. He's going to tell you what these dreams mean. And so Joseph is very confident that he'll be able to provide an answer, probably based on his experience, what God had done before. But he also recognizes that it's not his own ability. It's not him. It's God working through him. I shared last week, to the delight of Dustin and Matt, that I've been reading a book on preaching. Probably considered one of the best textbooks on preaching. It's one I had never read before. What I've loved about it so far, in fact, Dustin's going to have a copy of this, because he said, "Keep me informed. Keep me informed." But just the stuff, the first couple of chapters, really drive home what the role of the preacher is. And it's not about your style. It's not about your abilities. It's that the Lord said this, your job is to explain it and then exhort them to follow it. It's that simple. And he goes to great length to say, the preacher or the pastor that thinks it's all on him, or thinks it's his abilities, or puts all his time and energy into delivery, is getting it wrong, because it's not you. It's the Lord. And that's what we see with Joseph here. He says, can you imagine? I mean, the second highest official, or actually the Pharaoh, the highest official in the land, says, "I hear you can interpret dreams. Yeah, I can do that. I'm your man." But it wasn't. It's like, well, and it's not in me, but the Lord will give you an answer. That's pretty cool. Tells us something about ourselves. Tells me something about being a preacher and a teacher. It's not me. It's the Lord. So if you're convicted of something in the text, it's not me, it's the Lord using the text, right? That's the whole point. Which is why we have to let the text sort of speak. So he tells them this, tells him his dreams here. And so then Joseph's job now is to provide the interpretation. That's why he's there. That's why the Lord put him in this position. You jump down into verse 17. Is it 17? Well, go down to verse 14. He calls him. Verse 15, he's got a dream. He tells it to him. Joseph says, I can tell you what God says, essentially, is what he does. Jump down into verse 25, where he actually gives his interpretation. He says, now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same, meaning they both communicate the same basic truth. God has told Pharaoh what he's about to do. So God is giving you a picture as to what's to come. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years as well. The dreams are one and the same. So the seven good cows and the seven good ears of corn are basically the same thing. They represent years. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after the 7 years and the seven thin ears scorched by the east wind will be 7 years of famine. So essentially, you're going to have seven really good years followed by seven really bad years of famine. It's as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he's about to do. So twice now he says, this is what God is revealing to you. He's going to do something. And what he's going to do is provide you with seven abundant years of harvest, but then he's going to bring upon you 7 years of famine. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt. And after them, 7 years of famine will come, and all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. And the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of that subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now, for as the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God and will quickly bring it about. In other words, the reason God gave him two dreams is to say, no, this is really going to happen. He's confirming it. It goes back to the idea of the two or three witnesses confirming something. The same idea here. God gives him two dreams. First, let's tell him what's going on. Second one is to confirm that this is indeed what is going to happen. So we basically have Joseph explain to him here what these dreams are. So what's our takeaway with something like that? There's a principle that we find in the scripture, and it's this, that the world doesn't readily or naturally understand God's plan. And they really need somebody to explain it to them. That's pretty well laid out in the scriptures. We've got the enemy running around blinding people's eyes. We've got our own sin nature that keeps our eyes closed. Up until this point with Pharaoh, nobody could understand the meaning of what God had done. Four times in the passage it tells us that. Pharaoh's spirit was troubled, we find in verse 8. Also in verse 8 it says, Pharaoh recounted to them his dream, but there was no one who could interpret the dream. Verse 15 says, I had a dream, but no one can interpret it. Verse 24 says, but there was no one who could declare it to me. So four different times, we always tell you this about a passage, if something's repeated, it's important. So the author's telling us, nobody can understand it. Nobody can understand it. Nobody can understand it. Joseph had to be able to reveal it. God had to use Joseph to now explain to Pharaoh. Pharaoh had all the details. Didn't understand it because in part it was clouded in symbolic language, but the point is that he didn't have the capacity to do much with that and needed somebody to explain it to him. So the Pharaoh didn't understand what God had revealed to him, so he sent Joseph to explain it to him. You know what that reminds me of? There's a story of Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch. Do you remember that? Turn to Acts chapter 8. This is kind of interesting. Acts chapter 8. There's this Ethiopian eunuch, and he's reading the Old Testament, sitting in his carriage. Philip is out evangelizing, gets sucked up and transported over to the Ethiopian eunuch. Chapter 8 of Acts, verse 26. But an angel of the Lord spoke to Philip, saying, get up and go south to the road that descends from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is the desert road. Actually, he got sucked up after this, but angel tells him to go there. So he got up and he went, and there was an Ethiopian eunuch, a court official of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, who was in charge of all her treasure, and he had come to Jerusalem to worship. And he was returning and sitting in his chariot and was reading the prophet Isaiah. Then the Spirit said to Philip, go up and join him in his chariot. Philip ran up and heard him reading Isaiah the prophet and said, "Do you understand what you're reading?" And he said, "Well, how could I unless someone guides me? Unless there's somebody there to explain it to me." And he invited Philip to come up and sit with him. Now the passage of scripture which he was reading was this: "He was led as a sheep to the slaughter, and as a lamb before its shearers is silent, so he does not open his mouth. In humiliation his judgment is taken away. Who will relate this generation? For his life is removed from the earth." The eunuch answered Philip and said, "Please tell me, of whom does the prophet say this? Of himself or anyone else?" Then Philip opened his mouth, and beginning from the scripture, he preached Jesus to him. What I find fascinating about that is there this eunuch is reading the Old Testament. He was there to worship, which means he had some experience with the Jewish faith. Whether he had converted to Judaism or not is unclear, but he went up to worship. He's got a copy, which not everybody had a copy of the scriptures like he did, but he's got a copy of Isaiah's scroll and he's reading through it. He sees the words there, but he says, "How am I going to understand this unless somebody can guide me through it? Unless somebody can walk me through it?" It reminds me of what happened when the Jews came back from exile and Ezra's up there reading the law. And what does he have to do? He has to send the elders out. And it says that the elders went out and explained the text to them. There's this interesting dynamic in that even though the scriptures tell us God reveals himself in nature and he reveals himself in his word, because of the forces that are against us, we can't always understand those and we need help sometimes. Even with the church, think about it. We're told that God has placed into the body pastors and teachers. For what purpose? It doesn't mean you're all idiots. It just means that we need help sometimes. We need somebody to help us to understand it, somebody to guide us through it. When I study, I need help. I've got commentaries that I use. I've got Bible tools that I use. I've got people that I text occasionally. I called Dustin the other day to talk through a passage that I was working on. I said, "Hey, I wondered about this, and why is that?" Sometimes I need help guiding me. And so we look at what happened here. God specifically sent Joseph to Pharaoh to guide him through this prophecy that he might be able to understand what's happening. And he's able to reveal to him, okay, here's the way it works, Pharaoh. God has revealed to you what he's going to do here in Egypt. There's going to be 7 years of abundance, and there's going to be 7 years of famine. You need to know this because it has to do with you, and it has to do with this country. God had revealed this to him, but he needed somebody to help him understand it. Somebody to be able to put all the pieces together. I even think about Jesus. After spending a number of years, 3 years or so with the disciples, after his resurrection, it says that he spent 40 days traveling around visiting with them, but during that time, he explained the Old Testament to them and how it related to him. They even needed his help to guide them through understanding the Old Testament properly. So what this kind of tells me is that just because we have the information doesn't always mean that we properly understand it. We need somebody to help us. That's why God gave us pastors and teachers. Why he gives us authors and others to help us work through these things sometimes. Why he gives us brothers and sisters in Christ that we can talk to for counsel to get some direction. And I think about that here with Joseph. That was his purpose. As I think about that when it comes to this redemptive plan of God's, part of our responsibility is to explain it. You think about it. Why did God leave you and I here when we got saved? Why not just suck us up with a giant Hoover? Part of the reason is to explain the gospel. Not just provide some information, but to explain it. One of the things in this book I'm reading too talks about that. It's like, it's not just about the dissemination of information. Part of the job of the preacher and the teacher is to help them understand it. Because if all you're doing is disseminating information, it doesn't always work. And so part of our responsibility, God expects us to explain to the world the gospel. not just disseminate information, but to help them come to grips with it, help them understand it. And that's what Joseph does here with Pharaoh. Pharaoh now at this point should understand, okay, God's going to bring 7 years of famine, or 7 years of abundance. He's going to bring 7 years of famine. So what do I have to do with that? Wouldn't you kind of wonder about that yourself? All right, so now what? Why do I need to know this information? It's good to know, but what do I do with it? Well, that's where I think for me the challenge comes. If you look at what happens next, look at verse 33, verses 33 through 36. Now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in 7 years of abundance. Let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and store up the good grain or the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. Let the food become as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land will not perish during the famine. And the very next verse is, now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and all of his servants. Now, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this section. We're going to actually look more in depth at these few verses in Joseph's plan here next week. But the one thing I want to draw from this is what we see in verse 34. Notice the very first few words of that sentence. Let Pharaoh take action. What Joseph is doing here is he's exhorting the Pharaoh to do something with what he's just heard. Tells him, take action. It wasn't just enough that he heard what God's plan was. It's not enough that he was just aware of it. In fact, Joseph recognized that his responsibility went beyond interpretation, beyond just telling Pharaoh what God said. Because what he does at this point is he now turns his focus on helping Pharaoh to be able to apply exactly what God was going to do. So he didn't stop at explaining what God revealed. He goes on to now exhorting, Pharaoh, you need to do something with this. And he even provides him with a plan. You notice there's no separation there. He goes right from basically saying, here's what God has revealed, now you have to do this. He goes right into that application part, that exhortation, if you will. So again, it wasn't just enough for Pharaoh to know, and it wasn't even enough for Joseph to say, well, I did my job. I gave you the interpretation. Joseph recognized that his responsibility went beyond that. It went to having to exhort the Pharaoh, even to the point where he told the Pharaoh what he had to do. Now, when you think about it, this is a pretty bold move by Joseph. He's telling the Pharaoh, the head of the land, this is an order here. This isn't just, I got some ideas. You might want to consider this. It's phrased in the sense of an exhortation. You need to take action. If you're going to save yourself, if you're going to save Egypt, you need to take action. That's pretty bold for a man who just crawled out of a hole in the ground. And a Hebrew, we're going to find out in a later passage, that when Joseph, who becomes the second highest official in the land, when he's eating with his brothers, they have to sit at a separate table because the Egyptians were just revolted by having to be in the presence and sit with Hebrews and to eat with them. And so here's this young Hebrew kid, essentially, about 30, exhorting the Pharaoh, you need to do something with what God just revealed to you. And now we're going to find out that the Pharaoh heeds that and does something about it. So what's our takeaway with this? Well, this is where it hit me in the chest. Explaining the gospel is not enough. We need to exhort people when it comes to the truth. That's where I think I fail the most. So oftentimes my evangelism is information dissemination. Just make sure they know about Jesus. Just make sure they know about the gospel. Peter, in Acts chapter 2, as he was preaching the gospel, there's something in verse 40 that stuck out to me. And it says that he kept on exhorting them. He didn't just stop at presenting them with the gospel. All right, go figure it out. He stayed there and continued to exhort them, be saved from this generation. Kept on exhorting them. It wasn't enough for Peter to say, well, here's the gospel, do with it what you will. He essentially begged them, save yourselves with this. Use this. Be saved from this perverse generation. I think about when Bob Kegel shared the gospel with me. I remember very vividly. He wanted me to understand it, but he really encouraged me. He's like, look, I want you to think about this, but he said, don't go to bed tonight without making a decision. This is critical. And he knew that I was suicidal. He knew that I was not happy. He knew that I was severely depressed. He said, you've got to make a decision. You know the truth now. You need to do something with it. He didn't twist my arm to say the prayer right there in his you know, dorm room so that he could just get me off his checklist. He didn't want me just to say some sinner's prayer and feel comfortable with that. He wanted me to understand it, but he really exhorted me. When you go home tonight, he said, spend some time praying when you go to bed. Think about it. But don't wait to make this decision. And so I did. I went home that night and I laid up in my bed staring at the ceiling and I thought about it and I prayed about it. And his words kept coming to mind. And I did. I made that decision. Now, what's interesting about that is I made that decision without realizing the full impact that would have on my life. I did it because I didn't want to die and go to hell. And he made it pretty clear when he shared the gospel that, you know what, if you die without Christ, that's where you're going. And that's one of your fears, Mike. You've shared that with me. Okay. And that was enough to convince me that I needed to do it tonight because I didn't want to go another night. But it wasn't until about two weeks later when all of a sudden it clicked, like, wow, there's more to this. So it's not like I had all the information and knew everything I needed to know about all the God. And I had enough to know that, no, I need to make a decision here. But Bob was the one who encouraged me. Don't let this go another night. So he exhorted me. I think about the way that the Apostle Paul challenged Timothy to keep exhorting the people at Ephesus. When you think about it, I think that's probably where a lot of us struggle. Maybe I'm not alone. Maybe you're fine with this, but I started thinking a lot about the journey that God has had me on with struggling to share my faith. You know, I never had a passion for sharing the gospel. I always kind of wrote that off as, well, I'm not an evangelist. That doesn't mean I didn't believe in sharing the gospel. I did. But it's only been the last probably decade or so of my life where God has really impressed upon me that, no, you need to share. You need to, people know. And so I've pray about it all the time, and I make an effort, and I've shared those times when I get to share the privileges that I've had with people at work and other things. But if I think I've fallen short in any particular area, it's that I oftentimes stop at just disseminating the information. I really don't exhort. I don't know when the last time was that I really looked at somebody and said, you know, you need to do something with this. Can I encourage you? Don't wait. Pray. I think it's where I suffer, I fail the most. So I now have something new to pray about, that God might work on me in that respect. And why is it that I don't do that? I'll be real frank with you. Don't want to seem like I'm pushy. I don't want them to feel put off or feel weird around me. I don't want them to stop talking to me. You know? It's not that I'm embarrassed about it. I'm just keen on that relationship, and I want to keep that relationship going, and I'm afraid if I push them too hard that they might be put off by it, and you know, and those are important things. We don't ever want to offend by pushing too hard, and again, the goal shouldn't be just get them on their knees, and if they say the sinner's prayer, they're okay, because again, that's not what the Bible doesn't say. Just have them say the sinner's prayer. It says we're supposed to make disciples, which involves a little bit more than that. And so, yes, that's important for them to pray, and If we can encourage them to do that, then we should. But again, we don't want to be twisting arms. I'm not saying that. But there is an element of needing to exhort. And so I look at Pharaoh here and I think to myself, what if Joseph had not exhorted him? Take action. Where might it have been? What might have happened to Israel? I mean, to Egypt? It's because that he exhorted Pharaoh that you're going to see next week. The Pharaoh says, there's nobody as wise as this man. And he recognizes the wisdom in Joseph in exhorting him to do something, even so much so that he says, okay. And he takes Joseph at his word so much so that he says, you're in charge. You are the second highest. There is nothing that's going to happen in this country without you directing how it happens. All because Joseph exhorted him. I don't believe that's because, I just got the information. I think it's because Joseph exhorted him. You need to take action. And he took those words to heart. And he did. So I think we need to probably consider that ourselves. God is a God who reveals himself. He's a revelatory God. He wants people to know. Sometimes he wants them to know the specifics of their life. Maybe he reveals that to some people in ways that he doesn't to me. I'm not going to deny that, but I do know that overall he's revealed his redemptive plan in great detail. Nobody has an excuse. But he sends us to help him understand it. That's our role. You may not see yourself as an evangelist. I never did. I still don't see myself as an evangelist. I see myself as a pastor and a teacher and a preacher. But I think God still expects us to explain. At a minimum, our lives should. We're supposed to be salt and light, right? But that's why you're here. God expects us, I believe, to explain what he's revealed. We understand it. They don't. We do that all the time with politics and with health and all that, don't we? Real easy for us to talk about those things. But the most important thing? So I would encourage you, if that's not already where your heart is, it probably needs to be. And it's not easy, I admit that. But God has put you here with an understanding of the gospel, not just for your salvation, but that you might be able to explain it to others. But even beyond that, I believe we need to learn to exhort people. And again, that's an area where I've struggled. It's easy for me to do that here. It's a safe environment. But something I need to start praying more about. That I don't just stop at disseminating the information. That I learn to exhort. Encourage them. Take this seriously. Do something with this. Amen?